It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm Frankie Oliver, your host and founder of New Society. And today I'm joined by PR Week Editor-in-Chief Danny Rogers. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Frankie. You better?
Yes, getting there. Bit croaky, but getting there. Thank you. And our special guest, Joanne Robertson, CEO of Global Markets at Ketchum. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So we had such a great conversation. Gosh, it was just a matter of months ago, wasn't it, on Women in PR for International Women's Day. So it's great to have you back so soon.
Thank you. And
excitingly, this year, and really the theme for today's show, is that you are the president of the PR Lions jury at the Cannes Lions this year. So I just jump in with our first question, really, which is so what made you want to be, you know, a president? And I guess you probably judged a number of times previously.
Yeah, well, I judged for the first time last year. So I was a member of the jury last year and I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. And it was a real honour to have that amount of time with the best work in our industry. You know, the process from judging that first piece of work in the first round through to awarding your Grand Prix is almost 3 months.
Wow.
And so to really have that opportunity to evaluate and learn and the richness of the discussion in the room. Now, our jury last year was wonderful, chaired by the amazing Judy John Edelman. But it was such a diverse mix of characters and the debate we had. I changed my mind multiple times. I changed other people's minds. And so that experience is a once in a lifetime. Or now for me, it's going to be twice in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so when they approached me to be the president, I absolutely jumped at the chance. I think it's a real honour.
And so how many people are actually on the jury?
So there's 10 of us.
It's 10.
Yeah. Yeah, I should be clear. There's different types of jury. So we have a shortlisting jury. So that's people who only do this first round and they do it online. And then we have the awarding jury who do the first round. So they also do the online shortlisting and then they do the in-room actual discussion and awarding. So it takes multiple people. I mean, the PR category gets about 1,700 entries.
Wow.
So it's huge in terms of what you have to get through.
Is that number 1,700 higher than last year?
Yeah.
It is.
It's gone up, yeah, which is great to see.
So have you, every single judge, I'm just thinking about this, every single judge has to read 1,700 entries?
No, we did 400, yeah. Right. So each we divided into kind of groups. Each of us get about 400 in this first round. But even 400 is insane because it's a 2-minute case film per entry. And one of the things that's really important and which I really respect Cannes' commitment to, you know, we've all had to do unconscious bias training. This year, we've all had to do DEI and cultural awareness training because it's really easy when you're judging that volume of work. you see a piece of work and you don't understand it and you interpret that in your brain as it not being good. If I don't understand it, it can't be good. But actually, when you're judging work from Japan, South Korea, Belgium, you know, all over the world, you can't possibly be culturally in tune with every single market globally. So kind of what we've been trained to do is when you don't understand it, that's when you go deeper. So there's loads of supporting materials. There's the written entry. And in the written entry, there's a piece which is there for the team to describe the cultural relevance of the campaign. You can then ask questions back to the CAN team. If you still don't understand it, they'll come back with more data. I do a lot of Googling. I'm like, is this really a thing in Brazil? Like, I'm going to like go and have a look if it's real or is it made up? And so it's a really enriching process, but it's incredibly time consuming. And having done it last year, I definitely started too late last year. And then like by the time
How long is it taking you? I mean, it must be a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, it's basically a month since I started.
Yeah.
And I try to do an hour a day. Some days that happens, some days it doesn't. Yeah, I've got a full-time job plus two little children to balance it all in with. But I was really determined this year, having experienced it last year, every piece of work would get the same amount of respect.
So from all those 1,700, at the end of the day, on by the Wednesday, I believe it can, you've got to have one Grand Prix winner.
That's right.
A number of gold lions, a number of silver lions, a number of bronze lions. That's what the end
product is. Usually they say we award between 30 and 40 pieces of work when you go through bronze, silver, gold and Grand Prix. So yeah, it's a tiny number that will actually be awarded at the end of the day.
And it's your job as president to work out the final winners.
Indeed, yeah. And it's, you know, it's hard because creativity is so subjective, right? And that's fundamentally, I had to really remind myself of this at Cannes last year, is this is about creative excellence. And you can get mired into like the execution and the, you know, the results or the impact of the metric. But if you boil it all down, what was the creative idea that led to this incredible impact? Like that's where you keep going back to. And creativity is subjective. So we've all got a different perspective on what is and isn't creative. So it's a hard job.
More than the results?
Definitely more than the results. Look, results, and this again was a huge learning for me last year. When you're looking at results, as we normally see them in entries, whether that's, you know, reach, engagement, you know, if you're comparing a campaign that was just in India versus a campaign that was just in Belgium, you're not comparing apples with apples, right? So the results become slightly irrelevant. And the guidance I've given the jury this year is the results, you can't compare them, so it's impact. What impact did this campaign have for the brand or the organisation or the cause? But how did it, if this campaign hadn't have happened, would anything have been different? And that's a really interesting way to look at it. And you can look at it from a commercial point of view in terms of sales, in terms of brand expanding geographically, whatever it might be. And you can look at it from a purpose point of view. Did you actually change something? People's lives, legislation, whatever it might be. So if you boil it down to impact, it kind of makes it easier to then compare and contrast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Danny and I were just discussing our conversation that we had with Mark Perkins last year for Cannes. And actually just the quality of the entry and how much investment needs to go into the entry, especially from a video perspective, if you think you're judging 400 awards there. What would your advice be, do you think, for people who are just submitting? Sounds like you're incredibly diligent, but I can't, you know.
Not everyone is.
Not everyone will
some
be.
Some of my fellow jurors who remain nameless did not quite do it in the same way. Well, look, the thing is, it's like human nature. If it hasn't caught you in those first 15 to 20 seconds, it's going to be hard to get you back.
And that's the video,
and
surely.
That's the video. Yeah,
and the impact
articulation. The first thing we all look at is we press play on the case film. It's the first thing we all do. We don't kind of read the written entry first or the straight into the case film. So it's incredibly important. But what I notice is, what I'm looking for in an amazing entry is, you know, is it earned at the core? It's the PR category. So number one, like, if I see another billboard, I'm going to cry. The amount of billboards.
That came up in the conversation last year as well. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Honestly, like, as soon as that's the idea, I'm like, that's not PR. But, you know, so earned at the core. Is it culture first? Is this living and breathing the culture of the market that it is in? And then what is the impact? So, you know, that's how I'm kind of assessing it. You can get that across in the first like 15 to 20 seconds of the video, where you understand the reason, you understand that it's earned, you understand why it's living and where it's living, and you see the impact. And you're like, okay, and you lean into it. You can feel yourself physically be like, okay, I want to watch this whole video. I want to learn more. So many of the case films, and often it underlines that it's not a great idea if it takes them 2 minutes to actually explain it to you. Like, there's a beautiful kind of thing in simplicity. And it's hard to get a simple creative idea, right? If it was easy, we'd all be doing it every day of the week. But that first 15 to 20 seconds is critical. So nail your story in that and then expand it and build on it. But yeah, that would be my advice.
Okay. So like you, Joanne, I've been to Cannes, I don't know how many times, but certainly since PR was introduced, the PR lines were introduced, I think probably about 12, 13 years ago. So there's some skepticism about can for our audience on this podcast, which of course is both agency executives and also people who work in-house for clients. How useful a platform are the can lines in terms of how does the PR industry learn from what's happening at Cannes? Is it still relevant to our audience?
I think it is. I truly believe that it is the best creative work in the world is submitted to Cannes. And I know there's so much angst about ad agencies winning the PR category year after year. And look, it would be my dream to be the president who awards the first PR agency the Grand Prix. But creativity can come from anywhere. And earned first creativity can come from anywhere. And as we look at how the world has changed over the last 5 to 10 years, the swim lanes have become less distinct. So you see the big global PR agencies playing as much in above the line as the big ad agencies are trying to play in the earned space. So I'm a firm believer that all is fair in love and war. And I think we as the PR industry, I think there's a lot we can learn from how the ad agencies build an idea. Often we don't take it far enough. So, you know, you look at some of the work that's celebrated here in the UK in the PR industry, very creative work. We've got some of the best creative boutiques in the world, but often they're one and done ideas. They're amazing stunts, they're amazing moments in time. But you kind of then, from a can, when you put your can hat on, you're like, but where's the longevity? How did it live and breathe in culture beyond that one moment? And that's where I think we need to start to evolve our thinking. So look at some of the Grand Prix winners. You know, there was one other thing I love about being on the jury, Frankie, you'll think this is hilarious, is how many people come and tell you were wrong afterwards. Like, you know, yeah, well, we awarded the Breakaway Decathlon Belgian case last year, the Grand Prix. And the number of people afterwards who were like, oh, that should never have won for this reason, that reason, the next reason, which I love a good debate, so fine with me. But that's a great example of earned at the core. It was a simple, simple idea, but very brave for a sports brand to go into prisons. Like, I mean, I would just imagine that conversation as I'm pitching that idea to some of my big clients and it being shut down faster than you could ever imagine. So the bravery of the brand and the agency to come together to do something with that group, but also the layering of the campaign was incredible. From, you know, there was a public affairs angle, there was an above the line
angle.
It
changed the government's attitude.
Changed legislation, yeah. So
on prisoners,
yeah,
and how they treated prisoners.
We rolled the out across that actually the investing in physical and mental health and giving prisoners an opportunity to feel connected to the outside world, even though it was through e-cycling, was incredibly powerful in terms of them re-entering society. And so, you know, for me, the layering of that campaign was incredible. And we don't do that often enough.
Where did that idea come from? Did it come from the PR agency or did it come from the client?
No, it was client. It came from the ad agency.
Ad agency, there you go.
So it was an ad agency.
I was going to say, that's one of the problems, one of the reasons for the skepticism about Cannes Lions is that often the PR category is won by ad agencies and people feel, do they really have the best PR ideas? But as you say, maybe it's because they have similar ideas, but they're better at following them through, or they've got more credibility?
Well, I mean, I think that's also what the position of the PR agency is also with the client, right? I mean, I always remember there was a brilliant talk that my former joint MD, Bruce, did at an event once talking about the Walkers Give Us a Flavour campaign. Mm-hmm. And he followed it all the way through in terms of if you went into the marketing department, if you went in through the comms department. And of course, the punchline to the whole thing was obviously we know the Give Us a Flavour campaign and how incredibly successful it's been. But actually, if it had gone the comms route, it would have ended up as a survey about your favourite flavour of crisps in the metro, rather than necessarily gaining that big platform that took it all the way through the business. And I think we do, it's not that we don't, you know, a shortage of ideas, but finding the right idea in the right room with the right client totally. In the business is also really important, isn't it?
100%. And also the where I think ad agencies simply have more experience, but PR agencies are starting to do this too, is we can go with a big idea, but what ad agencies do is then they start to bolt on other agencies. So, you know, you look at the number of times PR agencies are credited in, I mean, Ketchum in a number of instances credited in Grand Prix winning work across the Cannes Lions, where we played an integral role, but we didn't have that. We weren't the ideators.
Same with Weber Shandwick.
With Weber.
Many, many credits, not that many Grand Prix in PR.
Yeah, and where you are clearly the ideator. Now, like this year, we as Ketchum have got two great entries where we are the ideator, and I'm hoping they do really, really well. But we need more of that. And there's a bit as well, which is a numbers game. Right? How many times are PR agencies entering where they are the lead ideator? And it truly is that creative excellence. It truly is multi-layered. It truly does have business impact or, you know, societal impact. And I don't think we challenge ourselves. It's easy kind of to sit and be like, oh, woe us. But the ad agencies are doing it. And not always well. I mean, they're just the number of ideas that are submitted that are not very good at all as well. But like I don't think that we don't have the skill to do it. I am absolutely confident that the quality I see across the industry, and I'll calling out this market, in particular the UK, I think the quality of the people and the talent and the agencies in PR in the UK, they can win a Grand Prix, but they have to come at it from a more 360 perspective, and they have to take that nugget of an idea they have and work it as hard as they can and layer it and make sure that they're bringing the client, to your point, Frankie, on that journey with them. But a PR agency will win the Grand Prix. And they might not win it in the PR Lions. You know, that Edelman did so well last year in other categories. So, you know, I think we could win Grand Prix. We don't have to stay in our swim lane, just same as the ad agencies don't stay in theirs.
I think Edelman shared a Grand Prix, didn't they, about 6 or 7 years ago with Chipotle.
Right.
That Scarecrow campaign. Mm-hmm. I think they shared it with Creative Artists Agency, who possibly came up with the film idea.
Mm.
And I think Weber Shandwick won a Grand Prix, maybe it was a gold, right at the beginning of PR, when it wasn't it some sort of farming, for pig farming?
Sounds
campaign.
Familiar, yes.
But I think you're right. There's never really been a PR agency that's won a Grand Prix on its own.
As the generator. Lead idea. Yeah. That's the dream, really.
So looking at this year's work then, are there any key themes and sort of flavours of work that you can see kind of coming through?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously can't talk about the detail now, but there are some amazing partnerships. I've seen some really beautiful work of different brands coming together where it makes complete sense and the impact has been phenomenal. So I'm excited to see that celebrated. There's some absolutely beautiful purpose work again. I'd say less than last year, for sure, in terms of the volume that I've seen. There might be more in the other cohorts that the other judges have been judging, but some beautiful pieces. But actually, the thing I'm most excited about is the pure play brand work. Last year, I was a big advocate in the room for pure play brand. It's, you know, I think it is what we do for the majority of our time every day, and I don't think it's celebrated anywhere near enough. I also think it's the hardest thing to do in the creative space, but there's some wonderful work in the pure play brand space this year.
And by pure play brand work, do you mean that generates sales?
Commercial work,
commercial.
That doesn't rely on, you know, a cause or a purpose, where it is purely about elevating the brand in consumers' minds so that they buy more. And so it might be about increasing sales, increasing market share. It might be about, you know, entering new markets and geographies. But work that doesn't rely on something else, it's the pure creative play on that brand and that product. Yeah, I think there's some really special work this year.
Yeah, I think many creative directors of and our listeners will be pleased about that. It's been a criticism, hasn't it? That PR the PR lines have tended to go to campaigns that are on gender diversity or ethnic diversity or sustainability. And there's been a lack of focus on really good creative ideas that just drive good old-fashioned sales. So,
and I think a bit of that is our attitude to it. I think we're a bit snobby about that sort of pure play brand work. Like, it's, I mean, I remember in the room last year, and if any of my fellow jurors from last year listen, they will be laughing already because they know exactly what I'm going to say. There was a massive debate about the Heinz hot dog pact, which from the very first time I saw it in round one judging, right the way through to it being awarded a silver, I was like, this piece of work is beautiful. Because it didn't rely on anything else other than the creative magic of the team that put it together. It totally understood the role that Heinz Ketchup played in its ecosystem. It built on, I mean, as a mum, when I saw it, it spoke to me. This is like the fact that you get 8 hot dogs in a pack and 6 hot dog buns in a pack and never the two shall meet. And that just, really, you're smiling. Like, that's what I did. I was like, oh my God. And
You'd have really felt that as a mum, though. Well,
and
you?
I had this flash when I was like, there's always 2 hot dogs. I always chop them up and put them on the plate beside like the bun. And I'm like, it always annoys me. And so for Heinz to take on that cause was brilliant because it was all about selling more ketchup. But they challenged, you know, the bun makers to make packs of 8 instead of packs of 6. And it was in every talk show. And it was such fun. The execution of it, the idea was simple. It was earned at the core. It sat in culture. The execution was fun. And the impact was huge. Like, they actually got bun companies to start making 8 and they were selling more ketchup. Beautiful. But to be honest, in the room, lots of the jurors just kept looking at me as if I'd lost my mind. Because I'm so passionate about it.
Do you think we are living in a bit of the post-purpose era now? Because certainly for many years at Cannes, to win a Grand Prix, you had to have a purpose. You had to have, we're going to improve the world through this campaign in some way. Do you think we're maybe over that era now?
I'm not sure we're quite there yet. I mean, if you look at the winners last year, they were still predominantly purpose Grand Prix. So I hope this year might be a tipping point. And I don't think it's that there's never, that we've had years of there not being that amazing pure play brand work. As I say, I think it's just that we don't look at it with the same respect. And I actually think it's often harder, if I think about the briefs that we get and we work on, it's harder to come up with a brilliant idea that doesn't rely on something that's emotive, that pulls the heartstrings, that tells a story, whether it's about ethnicity, gender, prisoners, you know, whatever it might be, that you have to, like, even judging the work, you have to check yourself. There's a piece of work that I watched that at the end of it, I had like a little, like, I was a bit choked. I was like, my God, that was incredible. And then I like did what I asked the jury to do. I was like, when you feel like that about a campaign, I want you just to like walk away and then come back and watch it again and look at it through the lens of what was the brand's real like legitimacy to play in this space. So I came back and I was touched by the cause because it spoke to me. But then when I actually evaluated the campaign, I was like, this is not a good campaign at all. There's no legitimacy for the brand. Now I've looked at the impact. There hasn't really been any impact yet. So it's easier to really connect with a campaign like that than it is with a pure play brand piece. But actually, it's often harder to do that.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Pure play brand piece, and to be getting commercial results for your client, for your organization, that is at the end of the day why we exist.
Yeah, making people cry, make them cry rather than make them buy has been the sort of mantra at Cannes in recent years. And I've been to many press conferences where the president of the jury will give some great soliloquy about how the role of the jury was to make the world a better place, which I always thought was a bit strange, because really the president of the jury is supposed to be picking the best work and the most effective work. And you've already mentioned that impact is going to be really important.
Yeah. And I reflect on last year and think about, you know, the Lost Class last year was a huge winner across
the gun control
in the US. And, you know, I still look back and it was an incredible piece of creative work. I mean, really clever, really beautifully shot, very beautifully delivered, you know, and had an emotional impact. But, like, it hasn't changed anything in America. You know, there's been no movement on gun legislation. You know, it's the what we're at 2023 with the worst number of school shootings, never mind others. So, yeah, I look back on that piece of work and I think, God, we were all so emotionally invested in that piece of work, because it really spoke to us, and because we all wish that action, many of us wish, I shouldn't say everybody does, many of us wish that they would take action on gun legislation in the US. But we got, I mean, my view now on reflection is we got carried away with that, because hasn't, now look, if I'm quite good at arguing with myself, so I could say, well, actually what it achieved was a group in America who hadn't thought about gun crime in that way, certainly started thinking about it differently. Okay, but, you know, is that really the mark of impact on a Cannes Grand Prix?
I think it's the acid test of any great campaign is, did it work? You know, what did it really achieve? And I always think of the Campaign for Real Beauty, Dove, which won many awards at Cannes
Amazing
over the
campaign.
Years. And I think it did work. I wrote a book about them, not promoting my own book, but I wrote a book about this, talking about campaigns that shook the world. But I think Dove campaign did work, in the sense I do think it changed the attitudes of female beauty in the media over time.
Yeah, and it's longevity to that point. They're still doing it today. I mean, you look at their latest campaign, which is all linked to how women are seeing themselves, young women are seeing themselves in social media, and the impacts of that in terms of self-harm, eating disorders, like all of that. Like, they're still in the depths of that issue and shining a light on it. And I think they are making a difference there. So I think it's absolutely right for their brand. They are committed to long term, and they keep creatively reinventing it, which, again, for a campaign that's been that successful, it's so hard. So absolute kudos to those teams.
Shows what a great idea it was at its heart, I guess, if they can keep on rolling it out year after year.
So you were saying that the PR industry is ripe for winning a Grand Prix. You know, have you seen, therefore, a kind of real shift in the quality of the creativity coming out of the PR industry? I mean, if we think about, you know, the investment in really amazing creative teams in the industry now, is that something that you're really starting to show through in the work, do you think?
I do. I think that we're at early stages, because I think it takes time, right, from when you invest in it, and then you build that confidence in clients that you've invested it in the right way. And then you build the trust that you can take a big campaign and layer it in a way that will have the impact that they desire. So there's some beautiful work coming out of the industry, but not enough at this point. So I think it is about those teams that have been built, those creative teams that have been built across the industry, from big agencies to the boutiques. I think it's them having the partnership with the account teams is critical. And again, this is a piece that the ad agencies have nailed over many decades. I think there's a piece now in the PR world, in our own way, because we're going to do it different to the ad agency world, that partnership between the account team and the creative team and how they go as a joint force to the client to really get the biggest ideas through. Because I think, you know, Danny, you were saying before, like, does clients really trust the PR agency to take that bigger budget and that much bigger stakes campaign and see it through end to end? Well, I think yes in some cases, but no, not everywhere yet. So there's a piece about us doing our own work internally so that when we show up to the client, they see that united front, they get that confidence, and then we start to see more and more work coming out of UK PR agencies.
And also whether we still got the permission for that brief too, right? Because, I mean, there was a massive golden moment where PR agencies were on level pegging, like the best idea wins that will get carried through the business. And actually, I think there was a definite shift in the last few years where actually the ad agency started to get much more at the top of the tree. And, you know, PR was tending to move a bit more back to bag carrying in a way that they hadn't been for a while. Do you think there's still, you know, elements of that that are still kind of showing through?
I don't know. I mean, I can only really speak from the Ketchum experience in terms of the reality of day to day. And actually, I think in more of our clients than ever, we've at least got an equal seat at the table in terms of best idea wins. We definitely have permission to bring big creative ideas. In fact, we're getting asked repeatedly, we want more, keep pushing us. So I think the value of PR, certainly from our experience, has never been so high. I think where we need to really focus our efforts is that layered approach to then how the idea rolls out.
So can we dig into that a bit? Yeah. So when you say layered approach, are you thinking multi-channel effectively?
Multi-channel, moments, like tempo moments for the campaign. I think too many times in PR, we still think it's a one and done. So we've got the idea, it's a brilliant idea, here's the execution, and then we move on. And that's fine. And there's some great work that comes out from doing that. But actually, when you're looking at the type of work we've just been talking about, that's just not enough. So when you've got a great idea, how do you then take that multi-channel? How do you take it multi-touch points? How do you show that it can be reinvented in 6 months, 12 months, 5 years' time? Because that's when you know you've got a brilliant idea.
So that the vision piece, I can totally see. Advertising agencies are absolutely fantastic at selling that. But it's so interesting what you say about the multi-layering, because I always think of PR agencies, the really good PR agencies that have done that kind of work over the last 20 years, have the ability to look at the world in a 360 way that I often feel advertising agencies don't do, and actually can just try and solve a brief with a 30-second ad and add some bits on top of it that take it into different places. But it sounds like ad agencies have potentially even shifted in their ability to be able to deliver those multi-touch points, especially across social, digital, use of content,
100%. And look, that democratization of channels has benefited both ad agencies and PR agencies. You know, like at Ketchum, we've been doing above the line for a number of our clients now because we've got the in-house production facilities. You know, we took for one of our clients, we took an influencer campaign that we put together and we sold it. So it was so successful that we then pitched, like, she should now be your above the line in your next ad campaign. They were like, right, okay, can you do it? Because she trusts you, you're a partner. Yes, we can. So it can go both, that blooding of boundaries can go both ways. I just think we in the PR industry, we stop ourselves short too often when we don't have to. And sometimes clients will say no, but that doesn't mean you go back and do it again the next time. So I think sometimes when we get a no, we're like, they don't want to do that. And it's like, well, they didn't want to do it this time. There's an arrogance and a confidence in ad agencies that we in PR too often leave at the door. You know, we're easy to work with. We like all of the things that are said about the PR like element of a kind of agency group. We don't always want to be that. Like, we need to be a bit more sharp-elbowed. We need to be a bit more demanding of the client. Like, you have to do this because this is the long-term impact it will have.
So, but there is an incredible dance as well that advertising agencies do as well. It's an absolute art, isn't it? Where they can take the client on such a journey over a long period of time that PR agencies sort of have that work concertinaed into a matter of weeks, and it's probably like the first couple of slides of a deck. Whereas actually that journey that you then go hand in glove with a client on to deliver that kind of strategic insight before you're even getting to the creative work, and the way that it's elevated to the client as well.
Yeah.
With that confidence, I think is a real art that you don't often see in PR agencies, I would say.
I think that's right. And it's something we need to nurture and evolve and learn. I mean, there's also a piece though about how you show the client what they could have won. Now, we had an example last year where we did an amazing campaign. We'd sold to them a really layered long campaign. They bought one bit of it. And then I went to lunch with the CMO and they were like, there was so much more we could have done with that campaign, Joanne. And I was like, oh, that door has just been opened. And I was like, well, I'll come in and talk to you about where we went wrong. And so we went back in and I said, look, here's what we originally pitched. Here's what we were allowed to do. Here's where we could take it now. It's going to have to go in a different direction. They were like, but why did we stop at that point? I said, well, that's the question we have to answer together. So you can start to have that more mature conversation where that partnership between the best agency client partnerships where you're growing together and you have that level of trust where you can push back on each other and say, actually, you didn't let us do that when it could have been so much more impactful for your brand and your product.
I remember that story about, do you remember the Fearless Girl campaign, which was a big Cannes winner? Probably seven or eight years ago.
One of my favourite campaigns.
There's a story about this, which may be a myth. I think McCann came up with the idea of the fearless girl, the girl in Wall Street standing facing down
the
famous bull of Wall Street. And the rumour was that McCann Erickson had the idea and that they were pitching this idea to many different financial institutions. State Street Advisors were the one who bought it. But that just goes to show what you're saying about confidence. So the ad agency comes up with a great idea and kind of it's up to you, client, if you buy this or not, as opposed to the other way around.
Well, it was a brilliant ad. There's a story from one of the people that worked for me who came from ad agencies where we'd done this campaign. The client had bought one bit of it that we thought was really important in terms of that impact story. And they were like, well, let's just do it anyway. We were all like, no, we can't, like, absolutely not. And they were like, why can't we just do it? We'll just pay for it. We'll do that bit of it. I was like, we can't do that. It's the client's decision whether we do it or not. And the client doesn't have the budget. It's not they don't want to do that bit. And we had this massive internal debate. And he said to me, in the ad agency, no one would have blinked. We'd have just gone, yep, let's go do it because it'll make it more of a, it'll make more
impact.
We'll win a can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it showed this attitudinal piece. Now, I don't think we should all become like ad agencies. That's absolutely not my dream, that's for sure. But there's traits and behaviours that we can learn from. Don't have to do it in the same way because there's all the stereotypes about ad agencies for all the reasons we know. And arrogance is one that we certainly don't want to take in. But not arrogance, but confidence. Just tweaking it and switching it for us in the PR industry world, I think would just take us to that next level.
So Joanne, you're a big campaigner on D&I and diversity. How important is that to the judging of Cannes this year and the sort of campaign success that comes out of it?
Well, we're certainly, when we look at the work, looking for work that is going to have an impact on a diverse set of audiences and also that cultural connection. So if this is aimed at a minority group of some sort, how is the cultural insight really relate to that group? So from the work point of view, we're definitely looking at it. What I'm excited about in terms of where Cannes is taking this is for the first time this year, they are collecting data on the diversity of the teams that created the work that's been submitted to Cannes. So this will be a benchmark year where you can really see, is the work that's winning from more creative teams or less? It's just going to be so rich in terms of what we can take out of it. What I suspect will then happen, whether it's next year or the year after, that data will start being shared in the judging room so that we can see the type of groups of people that brought this work to life. And look, I am absolutely passionate about diversity in this industry, and it's been really my number one priority at Ketchum in the UK while I've been CEO there. And at first hand, I can see the difference in the quality of the work, the more the diverse team that's worked in it. So when I started at Ketchum UK, we were 8% non-white. We're now up to 30% non-white. And you see the quality of the teams that come together, the different discussion they have, the pushing of boundaries, the challenging of each other in a way that didn't happen when we were predominantly one ethnicity. And that goes across, you know, gender, it goes across disability, it goes, you build that diverse team and diverse voices, you get lived experience that we haven't had in the monoculture we've had in our industry before, and it just keeps pushing the work. It's just more relevant. I remember we showed a piece of work we did for Adobe called Love the Journey with Little Sims. And it was played at a conference, actually. And at the end of it, someone came up to me who was from that community and said, you could tell that it was people who actually have lived experience of that journey of being someone of colour, wanting to be in the creative industries, and their parents basically saying, no, I want you to go in a more sustainable job. I want you to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it might be. It's like, because that story's been told before, but it's never spoke to me in such an authentic way. Like, I could see all those little nuances that really meant it came from the community. And so when that happens, again, when you talk about impact, the impact's so much greater when it's true to the community you're trying to speak to. So I really believe that if agencies aren't doing the hard work right now, first of all, building an inclusive culture. Because if you can't build an inclusive culture, you can diversify all you want, but people just rotate right back out your organization. So really teaching people how to accept people for who they are, where they come from, what they look like, what they think, and using that in a creative melting pot is so important. Then you'll diversify your agency, and then you will be sustainable for the long term. And you'll win more awards, I'm sure of that. But if you're not doing that hard work now, you should sit down and ask yourself, do you think you're still going to exist in 5 to 10 years? Because I truly believe that you're not.
And I suppose it also applies to the client side as well, because it's the client who approves the idea for their brand. If they've got a diverse team, they're more likely to spot a good idea and follow it through. It's not just agency diversity.
Yeah, and we've talked before about procurement client side being more demanding of agencies to be more diverse. What's interesting is a lot of the time they're slowing down because on their side, they're not diverse either. And so there's a bit of a holding the mirror. I'm saying, how can we be saying to this agency, like, how diversity shows your metrics? And then they turn up to a meeting and it's a room of all the same people. And so this is definitely push and pull to client side and to agency side, and saying, like, of course it's the right thing to do, but actually from a long-term business success point of view, it's critical. And, you know, Declaration of Interest, Procter & Gamble are one of my clients, but the work that Procter & Gamble have done in this space internally in terms of their own inclusive culture, their own commitment to diversification, but also they are, you know, widen the screen is a big campaign that they've done in terms of supporting diverse communities into creative advertising, film more generally. That's the sort of commitment you want to see. And they are very demanding of their agency. So, yeah, you see, when a client is, you can see they're doing the hard work themselves, that's really motivating for the agencies that work with them.
Presumably, if P&G is doing that, Unilever will be doing it as well. So you're having an effect and across the industry.
It has an impact. And if P&G can do it, anybody can do it. This is the thing I always say. You know, it's one of the reasons why I talk a lot about this from a Ketchum point of view, because I always say if a big agency like Ketchum can achieve these sorts of results, everybody can. Like, it's just about the amount of time and money that you really focus and you're really clear about what, set the goal, and once you meet it, set the next goal, and once you meet it, like, that journey is, it's never ending, and it's really hard, and there are some really horrible moments as you're trying to do it, but the return on that is, it's absolutely brilliant.
So just finally, obviously the big buzzword is AI at the moment. What impact is generative AI having across the whole of the can industry? I mean, I can imagine there's
a lot of AI work.
Yeah, exactly. Huge number of ways and means that AI is having an impact.
Well, I don't know. I'm a bit of a skeptic on these like rolling like themes. Last year, it was all about the metaverse and there was a huge amount of work entered about the metaverse. Fast forward 12 months, there's almost nothing. In fact, I'm challenging myself to think if I've seen maybe one metaverse idea this year. So, you know, 12 months is a short period of time for that complete 180. But look, AI, I do think slightly different. I think that it is going to be...
It's here to stay.
It is here to stay. Yeah. And it's actually, you know, whether metaverse is something you have to go to, which I think was always going to be a barrier.
We all went through Second Life and had some questions, well, didn't we?
So. Whereas AI is going to be part of how we just live and work every day. And I can't take credit for this because I saw this quote on LinkedIn the other day and it really spoke to me, where it basically said, AI isn't going to steal your job, but a human who knows how to use it is.
That was a PR Week podcast. It was our last. It was our last podcast.
Oh, I love it. Well, there you go. There's the power and influence.
Quote from the
terrifying
the woman at WPP, but Helen Knowlton said that. So
I thought it spoke to me, and I think that's absolutely right. It's like, just because we're a bit frightened of it doesn't mean that it's wrong. So, you know, I love all the work that's been done on ethics and responsibility in AI. I think it's really important. But there are some interesting AI campaigns, particularly from the automotive industry, actually, which is unsurprising as you think about where they are in their trajectory of using AI in their products and services. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure there's any can...
Well, I was just wondering whether I wrote a piece recently saying that it's amazingly easy now to use generative AI to create fake stuff like videos. And you know, I wonder if you'll have any entries that have been created by a robot.
Using deepfakes.
and I wonder whether you'll be able to spot it if they have.
If they have, totally. It'll be absolutely fascinating whether that's the case. And probably not, it's the answer. It's going to be really, really difficult. And that's the scary thing. Like, you can put people in places they never were. You can, you know, you can create moments in time that never existed. That is frightening. You can create work that was never... Although I have to say, Can are really good at checking whether work actually... You know, they've got some hard and fast rules, and they're very thorough at checking whether work really did exist and really did make it into the real world, if we know what that is anymore.
Gosh, so I think that brings us to the end of this week's show. So when are you off? I'm just trying to think.
16th of June, that flight takes off. It's only a few weeks now. I keep thinking Cannes miles away, and then I keep realising it's just a few weeks.
And Danny, you're obviously going to be there as well.
I'll be there as well, yep. I'll be covering the PR Lions and finding who Joanne has judged to be the winner on the Wednesday.
Not just me, there's a whole group of
you. You and your team. Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it. And perhaps we'll do a podcast from Cannes,
where you can gloat about what a lovely time you're having and how much rosé
you're
drinking.
Work.
It's very hard work. I agree with that, Danny. Very hard work.
I have to say that every year.
I don't know, Tony, the choice between being the president of the jury or being Danny Rogers at PR Week. Who's having the best time here? What do we think?
I reckon we'll balance that out.
Joanne does all the work.
I wish you both the very best, Cannes, and we'll look forward to hearing all about it when you get back. Or maybe when we're there. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll very much look forward to you joining us next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.